Hello, we're here today to discuss our nonfiction book club questions for I Am Not Your Negro by James Baldwin. So we have myself, Tiff, we have
Sharonda,
Valerie,
Levon,
Bear Seat,
Ozzy,
and RJ.
So excuse the extra noise and thumping in the background. So our first question: what preconceived opinions did you have, and did these change after reading the book? So, I didn't really have any preconceived opinions about the book. So, I can't really... So, no, I didn't have any preconceived at all, honestly.
Yeah, I didn't have any. I didn't have any preconceived either. Looking at it. I just didn't know what to expect reading from the title. This can go so many different ways.
It said, a major motion picture, so, I figured it was something along the lines of a documentary, but, just based off the title, I'm Not Your Negro, I thought it was going to basically have, almost, conversation similar to the Michael Eric Dyson book. I thought it was going to have more of that in there, but to be honest, this is my first, anything reading dealing with James Baldwin, so I expected something along the lines of the book we just read. But after reading it, I was like,
when I read the title, I'm Not Your Negro, I thought that the book was gonna elaborate on why I'm not, like some people say, no. This is what you think about me, but no, let me tell you this. That's what I thought, I'm Not Your Negro, was going to address the title of that. People call you certain things, like when they say color or black.
I think it's more of an argumentative of why white people call black people Negroes, and why in his perspective, why I'm not, and I've heard his quote before where he's like, I'm not your Negro, but if you want me to be, I can be one, and it's more, argumentative. That was my preconceived notion of the book based on the title.
Well, I didn't have any preconceived notions about it. Getting off the high of Michael Eric Dyson's book, I just thought I was going to run into another book that was similar. But once I read it, it was nowhere near the same.
So, the next question. What are the book's strengths and weaknesses?
I'll go first. The strength to me is it's a lot of material from different perspective of at the timing, I guess. A speech from Martin Luther King, a speech from Malcolm X, and his perspective, and correlating it with media in a sense, movies and so on. That's just strength. The weakness for me is, and I don't think per se it's a weakness, maybe it's because of my reading of my the way I receive, reading. And it's hard to when they switch between the different conversations between a conversation interview that Jay Baldwin did and an interview Malcolm X did, it's hard to picture. And it's no beginning, middle, end kind of, it's not a story form. So you have to really try to understand what the message is per chapter versus where the other books we've read is in a nice form, middle, beginning, middle, end, there is a story. I guess that's not what intended, the book is intended to do, but for me, those are the two things,
but I liked it. For me, the strength was the factual material.
I
will have to agree with Yvonne, but I like the facts that was in it. Like they said, most people don't know the facts. But for me, it just felt like it didn't connect. Like the storyline, like there was, there's no storyline to it. So it's kind of like you kind of have to go back and forth to understand it. Or to reach understand it, but there's like no flow to it for me. That's the weakness for me. There's like no real flow.
So for me as well, I'm just going to piggyback because the strength, I did really like how he had a personal relationship with the three guys that he talked about, and all we know is from what's in the history books, you know, like what's been written about these guys and the few clips that we do see them in the media. But he knew them on a personal level. He knew their wives, he knew their children, he knew them outside of, you know, them being in front of podiums and in front of big audiences. So that's one thing I really did enjoy about the book. Also, the weakness is just not my style of reading. Like, I like it to flow. I like it to be cohesive. So that's the only thing I did not enjoy about the book. But, I mean, it did say that it was from text from James Baldwin. So that's okay.
The strengths for me would also be the personal stories, the personal connections that he had with these famous and well-known men. The weaknesses for me would be that it had me all over the place. So I started reading and I would go to the next page and like, huh? What? Like, what's going on? So it didn't flow for me. But once I saw the documentary, it made more sense. So that was how I perceived it. That was the weakness for me.
Strengths. Like I said, this is the first anything that I've actually read or from James Baldwin. So to have it in text form, so I can go back to, versus watching a documentary, so I can go back to for, you know, and read. I'm all over this, I'm on the wrong question. Moving along.
Actually, the other thing is that it's great that it's in text, but the not every documentary can be a book. And I don't think this is one of those that should have been a book. It's just not something that, like, most documentaries have, like, some kind of, like, flow. This is really just about conversations and his. It really doesn't even give a perspective when you really think about it. It doesn't even give perspectives of like what he thought of them,
right,
per se. It gets snippets of what their beliefs are, what they stood for. But it's really, I don't know. I just didn't think, to me, that it's not a documentary that you can transcribe to a text and then expect people to be like, oh yeah, I get what that is about.
Yeah, so. I agree. That's basically what I was trying to, not basically, but somewhat what I was trying to get to. Just because we did watch the documentary and then versus we read the book first, then we watched the documentary. The book does nothing that the documentary does for you. The documentary just gives you that feeling that, oh yeah, but when you read the book, again, it's going all over the place. You don't have an idea of what it's actually about, even though the title says, I'm Not Your Negro, but reading the pages, it's like, okay, so it's just, you know, things he's writing down, or this is how he felt about this, or, but it didn't go together to me until you actually watched the documentary, and then it kind of, you know, you understood a little bit more, but.
So you felt like it was, wasn't able to hone in the context of the documentary.
Correct.
And the book.
I think it was just more relatable when you visualized it. But when you look at the aspect that this was supposed to be letter, and with a letter, if I write you a letter, it's going to be, or I'm writing letters on to myself about this person, it's going to read that way. So I like that it's written from the point of, just like some people only watch documentaries, some people are only going to read. So I like that it's put down on paper, you know, so that someone can actually read the things that happened. And on paper, I actually saw
Third question, what feelings did this book evoke?
For me, it evoked confusion. I totally think it should have been named something else. I think it would have had a better, it would have been a better read had it came from James Baldwin and had not someone try to recreate his diary or notes that he left. I think it should have been left alone, honestly, but like I said, the documentary was good.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Reading it, when he was talking about the text and the letters from him, and as you read it, it's like, okay, well, these are not his thoughts, but it's like, you kind of want to realize how James Baldwin was thinking or what he was feeling as he was writing them, but you don't really get that feel from it, reading it. So it was a lot of confusion. I don't think it should have been. I think it was one of those things. After I read, I was like, this probably shouldn't have been. Should have just been left where it was. Just left alone. It would have been.
For me, it actually made me kind of angry and sad all over again, because a lot of the stuff in the text, like when they had that documentary from the FBI, right? Yeah. And they're saying, we're looking to James Baldwin. We think he's homosexual, right? So it's just one of those things where they see this powerful black man, and they're like, how can we bring him down? We're going to call him a homosexual. You know, like, what does that have to do with the FBI? And they're looking to him if he's doing all these crimes. And they're like, he's expected to do this, this, and that. And how when... It pretty tells you about all these powerful black people in the movement and how if they stood for something, they were brought down. They were murdered. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the best way to shut someone up? You kill them, right? Kill them. So that kind of upset me that all these people stood for something and then they were brought down the best way that they knew how to bring us down. They had to, you know, kill them. So.
Yeah, it evoked sadness. Sadness. I can't say any of it brought me joy. But it, for me, evoked the same thing, sadness and anger because of that. Because if he made the FBI's list, and he merely made it because of his articulation and the fact that he was going out and about. Because he really, when he explains witness, he really didn't do more than that. Right. But it's the fact that he was writing these things, and so when you put it out there, you can reach more people. Same thing with Malcolm, same thing with Martin and Medgar. It was a little different with them because they were in the grassroots of doing things. They were in real movements moving forward. So for them, and it's true, if you pick the strongest head, if you pick the person that's the leader, people are either going to continue to follow in the route that they're going, or they're going to drop. Well, what's the best way to stop somebody? Invoke fear. So if I kill who this person is and you thought they were so strong, maybe nobody else will take this place. You know, who wants that target on their back? So yeah, it was sadness and anger.
I agree. With the part when he was saying, you know, Malcolm was only like 26 at one point in the book. And it's like, you know, when you read that, you're like, wow, damn, it's 26. I'm 31 right now. Can you imagine?
I did the math. I was like,
see?
Dang, that's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when he was like, you know, I'm older than all three of these men. Mm-hmm. And when you're the oldest, you know, you're expected to do these things. Like, you're the younger ones look up to you. So you're supposed to be this person for these, you know, the role model for these younger individuals. And then, you know, you're also, because you're the oldest, you're always expected to die before all of them. However, he outlived all of them.
Right.
And just the thing, like, wow, they were, like, all so young. And in their prime, or quote-unquote prime, what people like to say. And, like, in the grassroots of things, like you were saying, and then here he is, like, the old elder, and he had a deep connection with all of them, and for him to outlive them is, like, sad. It's like, wow, like, these are my babies. Like, these are my babies. I watch my babies grow. However, they left before I did. Like, now I'm here, I am to try to, you know, tell their story. Or, like, people, how, like you said about Malcolm, people, what they thought he was. They thought he was a racist, or they thought,
he said, I'm not a racist, or so I thought. People thought Malcolm was a racist, but was he really, or something? Or something like that.
Yeah, like, see, like, yeah. He knew him. Like, you know,
so they thought.
Yeah, so they thought, exactly. So, yeah, it's more sadness than, you know, the idea of that, like, wow.
But what black people need to really get a grip on and understand is that is exactly who we perceived, you know, height on that and you start talking, you know, speaking on racial issues, automatically now you're racist. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you're spewing hatred. Never mind that all these other things came about and you're only speaking on the truth.
Right.
But that becomes the perception. One of the sad aspects of this whole thing, and all three of them, were they all had families. They weren't single men doing this. They, you know, these were married guys. These were somebody's father. Exactly. So, yeah, it was very sad.
For me, I would say that it reminded me, like, reading, and it was so interesting how, like, he emphasizes on all three, somewhat mostly on Malcolm's and Martin Luther King's death, and you know, it almost takes that, like, take a deep breath when he's like, I'm in Palm Springs, and it was like, I don't remember the whole day, but I remember this part of the day, and he's like talking by the pool and the phone rings and it's a headshot, he's still alive, but you know, that kind of stuff, like,
yeah,
you know, kind of grabs you. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of you remember seeing Ali, I don't know if you guys seen it with Will Smith. I don't know if you guys seen it. But do you remember when, I think it was Malcolm, but maybe when Malcolm was shot, he was in the car and the radio was playing and he was driving. And that just, that moment, like, to be in that space and that energy when you find somebody that you adore, that you love, that you admire, and just gunned down for no reason at all. And that feeling, I think, is just, like, almost sadness, but also just rage. Like rage, and I think that was part of what, you know, caught me. And the other is, for me, somewhat of a rage, and like, to when he does the comparison or the dichotomy between, you know, racist and black people in this country, and how he talks about, like, oh, you know, even with all that being said, when white people are, you know, discriminative or prejudiced or you know, racist or whatever have you, the, I hate to use this word, but like, almost complacent of black people at some point, where we were never violent, we have never been aggressive. The most violent you can get is really, quote unquote, FBI names among being violent, is the Black Panther movement. And it kind of like, but why? Why is it that we were, for 400 years plus, why were we that way? Why were we? And obviously there's reasonable explanation and reasonable reasons to why we were the way we were, but he exploits that. And, you know, and that scene in the documentary when people were singing and clapping and they were going into the police wagon. And that, like, somewhat kind of infuriated me a little bit. But, yeah, sorry.
No, that's good. Because you know where that comes from? Of what you wouldn't, of how you're thinking you would not respond. Could I clap and sing and go there, or would I be wanting to rip somebody's head off?
Maybe. Yeah.
But I guess they were all a part of Martin's movement. You know, Martin's movement was that churchy kind of.
Yeah, and like how we even talk about, like, how at the end of their journey or their movement, how Malcolm became adopted Martin's philosophy approach versus, and then Martin adapted somewhat of Malcolm's, like, you know, by any means necessary, not violent, but like, you know, upset and aggressive, and it shows that part, and like that, I think he highlighted really well, like, the growth of both men, and Malcolm even calls Martin
Uncle Tom.
Yeah. Because he says, you know, you are perpetuating that, what white people want us to be is that submissive, stay down, you know, praise God, everything's gonna be okay, turn the other cheek, blah, 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 where Malcolm was completely opposite in the beginning. He was aggressive by any means necessary, you know, don't, you know, and he embraced segregation. He's like, I want it to be segregated. I want black people to have their own, to be their own. Versus Malcolm is like, you know, praise
but
God.
And people had to understand where they came from. History shows that when you had, we had our own, we were the greatest at growth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
I did like.
Question 4. Was the book intended to teach the reader something? Did it succeed or did it fail as a teaching tool? I'm not sure about teaching someone something, but it was definitely to put into perspective, like, these were these guys on a personal level. That's what I took from it. So, yes, you see them at the marches, and yes, you see them, like I said before, behind the podiums, but these were still young Black men, like you said, with families, and they put everything on the line. So, in a sense, I guess it is teaching you that you don't have to feel like you can't do anything. Like, okay, this is bigger than me, because it was bigger than the three of them, and they still put their lives on the line. They still fought, and they led great movements. So, that's what I'm going to say, actually, thinking about that. And, yes, I feel like it did succeed with that.
I thought it was enlightening. I thought that it was, it had definitely teaching moments, and it shed light on things I may not have been aware of. I didn't know much about, I knew who Lorraine Hansberry was, and I knew what she did, but I didn't know her behind the scene kind of thing like right. He did, and he knew her personally and had a relationship. So I think as far as teaching, I think it could be a teaching tool, particularly for someone who doesn't know much about any Black history of these people, what they even stood for or their root organizations.
At first, I didn't think it was much of a teaching tool, but like Devon said, it does have its teaching moments. I know there were some things in there while I was reading. I would go online and I would look it up to see, you know, how more in depth, like the whole FBI thing. Like, I never really dove into the FBI or like really cared too much about it, but reading that, it was like, okay, so what is the history behind the FBI where they felt that they had to do this? I kind of went in and started some research. I didn't get in depth into it, but then there were other things like the whole thing with Lorraine. I looked her up. I wrote her name down so I can go back and see her history. Some of the other things in there that I probably would have never known before, that's not even in history books. Mm-hmm. That it just made me want to go through and just kind of read more in depth on it to see what it was about. So it does have this teaching moment. I don't think it was like a full, complete lesson for the whole book, but it does have its moments.
The teaching moment for me was learning about new people more so. Once you started it off and, you know, you didn't know about James Baldwin's sister who gave him, you know, let him take over of his, the notes and stuff. So some of the people I looked up, because I've never heard of them before, so I've learned about new people. That was the teaching lesson for me.
Even on a few new words.
Always.
I agree with the learning new people. Like, who have learned anything about Medgar? Is anyone?
Me! I looked him up.
It was your first time with
I'm
Medgar,
sorry,
right?
That was my first time.
I mean, he's really? In the history book, but yeah. I don't think they say much about him in the history.
They don't say too much about him, so I have to look more.
I think they talk about him on a help.
Because they do. They talk about him. He was one of three who always went down for the civil rights movement for as far as voting.
Yeah.
Voting and stuff. And, you know, they were called the Freedom Riders. He was a part of the Freedom Riders.
I didn't know anything about Medgar until
this book, right? And that's what, so I put a little Medgar. Sticky, like, Googled Medgar. Because, like, mm-hmm. Who is this Medgar man? Like, I've never heard of Medgar ever.
And I don't think he highlights enough about him. I mean, he highlights that he was part of the movement. He was there in Birmingham and so on and so forth, but he doesn't really highlight. Never he does say he was young and, you know, he would have known.
But he was the first to die, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wore.
He was 26. Yeah.
Said he wore his oldness, his tired, mm-hmm. his fatigue on him. And how he died, of course. But.
I think for me, I think it's a teaching tool, like you guys, everybody was saying, it's a teaching tool to highlight each and every, like, person in here, you know, Martin, and Malcolm, and Medgar. But what I thought was the best teaching tool for me is the last part when James Colton is doing some interview and he's talking about, he says, like, you know, I don't know what white people feel. I think it's, and he's saying, like, I don't know what, how, I don't know what most white people feel in this country, but I can only conclude what they feel from the state of this institution. I don't know what white Christians, you know, I don't know white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I do know the most segregated hour in this country is Sunday at whatever, you know what I mean? And I think, yeah, so it one of the, to me, I by far my favorite part of this book is this, where he's talking about, like, you know, I don't know, you know, because people in this country, till this day, post-Trump or not, feel as though we're in this post-racial state, but we're not. Right. But I don't know, you know, I'm not racist. I don't know if you're racist, but I can tell you that, you know, he was talking about, you know, I can tell you how, you know, Negroes can't get housing opportunities. I can tell you, I don't know how white people feel, but when, you know, when you go to schools, the most segregated time is lunchtime, because the black people hang out with black people hang out with white people. And it goes on about, and it's true to this day, because it speaks to, although we are in such post-racial state, but we are the most segregated country. And I thought it just, I mean, this is 60s or early 70s, and we're still in that state. And also when he talks about, you know, Kennedy saying maybe we'll have a president
in
40 years. And, you know, Jake Baldwin was saying, you know, you just got here. Right. And you're talking about maybe in 40 years we might get it. We've been here for 100 years. What makes you think, you know, that kind of stuff, you just like, yes. Like, and even to have the idea that one day, in their wildest dreams, although they might have thought it, in their wildest dream, they will have a president, as, you know, Barack Obama being the president, not only for one term, two terms. It's just,
you know,
that part stood out to me. Yeah, it makes you think, like, did he say that really meaning it, or was he just saying that just to be saying it? Like, did he really believe what he was saying when he said that? Did he really believe that in 40 years we would have a black president?
Well, I like how he, when he, she's talking about doing that interview, when he addressed it the way he did, because what a lot of people do, particularly when Anglo-Saxons are asking you a question, they think that everything you say is coming from a feeling. And I like that he dismissed all emotion out of it and said, okay, I don't know this, but I can tell you the actions do this, this, that, and the other. So if I correlate action with the meaning, guess what? This is how y'all feel. And I did.
He covers everything in these texts. Really, he talks about, you know, Christianity and religion. He talks about, you know, the institution. He talks about, you know, real estate lobbying and keeping him in the ghetto. He talks about education and saying, you know,
worst textbooks.
And he says, you know, I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know that this textbook they're teaching my children. So you can't teach American history without teaching
Black history.
Mm-hmm. So you can't conclude black history in 2-3 pages in American history and call that history. So
definitely. And then they'll have 2 or 3 people.
Yeah, exactly.
Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King.
Exactly.
Those were the major Rosa Parks, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, probably the biggest person they teach about in black history in schools. I was going to say, in U.S. history, which is required in my junior year when I went to school, I can tell you the only person of color we talked about was Francis Scott Key. Okay.
We didn't talk about that in U.S. history, but I can tell you that we read about that, and aside from that, all I saw was slavery and Ku Klux Klan
videos, and I promise you, I was the only black student in my class.
I went to school in Fairfax County,
and I was the only black student in my class. So how do you think that feels when you're the only sitting there? And they're watching slavery movies and Ku Klux Klan movies.
I asked my history teacher in high school, because she kind of like bypassed all the rules. She like broke all the rules in high school. Her name was Miss Black, but she was like very pro-black, like extremely pro-black. So we learned all about, like, she kind of went more into depth of black history than she did into than what we were supposed to learn. Like, how curriculum was like, you get black history for a week and then you're done with it. She was like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
If the author discussed problems or issues, did he also provide solutions? Do you agree with these solutions? He definitely discussed some problems in there and everything. And I don't know if he, like, provided exact solutions, like, here is how you do this, but he definitely made you think about it. Mm-hmm. So he definitely made sure that he brought it up to the forefront, like, this is what's going on. So what are you going to do about it, type of thing. So I would say I can't agree with the solutions because it wasn't like, okay, do this type of solutions, but it was like, this is what's going on. So it's up to you to do something about it.
I think that test with you. Yeah, I think we can all agree. I thought this was a good read after what we just read, though.
Okay.
I do. I think the reason why I think it's a good read after what we read is because Michael Eric Dyson's book was it had a lot of factual stuff in it, yes. But it also had a lot of other things that prepared you for a book like this. Mm-hmm. So, I think that.
Because he also touched bases on Dr. Martin Luther King. It did definitely tie together.
Yeah, I don't think it really provides solutions, but like you all said, it made you start thinking. There was a part in there on like page 103. With the lynching part. The lynching part. When he's like, you cannot lynch me and keep me in ghettos without becoming something monstrous yourselves. And furthermore, you give me a terrifying advantage. You never had to look at me. I had to look at you. I know more about you than you know about me. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced. So that right there is probably one of my favorite parts of the book. In general, and just to go back a little bit, when we were talking about the Michael Eric Dyson book, when we were talking about, you had to know everything about them.
Right.
The same things as the exact same thing. Y'all haven't really had to look at us for a while. I mean, look at us as far as being afraid of us or terrified of the uprising, but y'all never had to really dissect us or know what makes us tick or, how to make you smile or, all that stuff. Y'all didn't have to look at us. So we have a terrifying advantage. We have to know everything about you all. Y'all don't have to know about us, but not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced. So you can't change anything until you face the issues.
The issues.
Won't be changed, or you can't face it. So, yeah. Okay, what were you gonna say about?
What were you gonna say about? Definitely. I legit on that page. I think that is the key to the solution of what he's saying. And he's saying, because this country, like you said, I had a conversation with a friend of mine. From Germany, and she said we were talking about history and stuff like that, and she was telling me about like cultural stuff there. But this is the only country that has never faced the fact of the brutality of the the brutality in this country or the slavery, and there is a sense of lack of acknowledgement. I think it's more like, okay, it's been done, let's move forward. No, you need to acknowledge what took place and why Black people in America are the way they are is due to the 400 years of oppression, 400 years of violence, criminalization, blah, 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 blah. So I think he's saying, like, you can't change unless you face it, And this is, back in the day, and then he talks about, like, my other favorite part is the next part where he's talking about, he said, I attest to this, that the world is not white, is never white, is never been white, cannot be white. White is a metaphor of power. And we talk about race being a social construct, and it's not, there's no such thing as race. We all come from being from Africa and being Black, and white is a metaphor of power and is intended to make other race submissive, saying we're the elites, we are the creme de la creme, the highest of all powers. Yeah. So I think when you start talking about it, when you read the book, oh my God, this makes sense. Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's great writing. It's just the flow of things wasn't that great. But I think when you break pieces by pieces and like read it, you're like,
These would have been great inserts into Michael Dyson's book.
Oh yes,
yes, awesome.
Like, the combination of it would have been. Yeah, amazing.
I especially love the part when he spoke on, when he was very clear on this, and it was great. He said, you know, if you take a Jewish person, a Pole, you take a Irish person, do this. Oh, and then they're feeling like they're not going to take, they're taking a stand for it. We're going to fight for this, and this is what we deserve. No one takes that like they're going to do an act of violence, or they're just going to do whatever bad to them. But the moment you insert a person of color, a black person having those views, now, exactly.
Now, and let's make an example out of them so no one else gets out of line like them again, pretty much. That's what he said.
Well, that's like I totally, like when you asked about the FBI, so I totally disagree with the FBI putting in this country right now, when you're taught on a police department of hate organizations, move in the Black Panther Party, not the original Black Panther Party. They have no place on that watch list because they were never terrorist organizations. Now, the new Panther movement and stuff, that's fine. But you can't. But I think the only reason why they put them on that watch list is because the Klan in Aryan Nation fell under it. But they were. They were hateful people. They were lynching people. The Black Panther movement never did any of that
thing
stuff.
With the Black Lives Matter movement, they automatically made it like a terrorist association.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, the Black Lives Matter didn't even start with black people.
It didn't.
But was it recent or did I read it? I get things mixed up. But they were saying, I don't know if it was on the Senate floor, but they asked them, why are you looking into Black Lives Matter? I don't see anyone investigating the KKK. Mm-hmm. Because they're still prominent, they're still active, and they're still on the watch list.
They're actually on the terrorist watch list, so why not?
I haven't heard about one investigation, one person coming down from the KKK. I haven't heard anything about them doing anything but voting for us in the Senate and the delegates, because that's what they're made of, KKK. Mm-hmm. Did the book leave you with unanswered questions? I think we all say yes. Yeah. With the people, we wanted to research them more and events and things like that. But that's a good thing.
I would also like to read more of James Baldwin's work. Yes,
I agree.
Definitely or watch more of his videos.
More, more of James Baldwin in general. But, you know, watching the videos and researching the people that he spoke of, like Lorraine Hansberry. I've read Raisin in the Sun several times. But when he said her name in the book and he was talking about her talking with Jeff K, and I was like, I put a sticky in there and said, Google who Lorraine is. But then when I watched the documentary, you're like, oh, she wrote Raisin in the Sun. I've read the book, you know, and I was like, oh, great. So, you know, but basically, left unanswered questions of researching individuals I've never heard of anyway, and reading more of his work and what he actually stood for, what was his part in the movement in general.
Yeah, I knew who Lorraine Hansberry was and Langston Hughes because they were writers. And, you know, that was something very interesting, you know, to me. Also, I think they were both rumored to be homosexuals. They were quick to label folks to be dismissive with them or put them, you know, kind of in check. Yeah. Or I think they had something, because back in that time, of course, that was very taboo. So.
I think along with everybody else, I don't, per se, not answering questions, but more shine the light on things I didn't know that I would like to further investigate or know, and also I would actually like to go back and watch some of the movies that were in that documentary. Like, I've never seen, what's the one you were talking about,
Imitation of Life,
you know, those movies that that were, that I've never really took the time to watch.
Read or watch Raisin in the Sun?
Oh, yeah. I read Raisin in the Sun. I watched it a couple of times. It's been remade
It was never required reading for y'all in school?
Not every curriculum, but...
Not in D.C.?
They made it in the Montgomery County.
Yeah, we have to read it.
when I was in Orange Book Quadrant. Yeah.
And that's been remade as a movie a couple of times.
Yeah, a few times.
They have one with P. Diddy, right?
It was a stage play, right?
Yeah, it's a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just stuff like that that I would like to watch. And I think because some of the scenes, like he was saying, I don't know, on the documentary when the, I don't know, one of the guys that were on the train and he was running.
Yes.
And then he was talking about how, like, you know, he reached out for him, trying to get him back on the train and he couldn't make it. And the black dude, whatever.
Jumped off the train.
And how he, and James Baldwin was talking about the two perspectives about white people who were like, almost relieved, because that speaks to that mentality that I have to be complacent, I have to make sure you're okay, and that's the same thing at work.
I'll caretake you even though you were trying to destroy me, and
that's the same thing in a workplace. Like, black people have to think twice, three times to assure that I am presenting in a manner that is okay with you, that you won't be like, oh, why is she doing that? Or, like, you know what I mean?
That's so aggressive.
Yeah, so it's the same thing. Like, white people felt like, he got off the train versus black people were like, why'd you get off the train? Like, you know, you have to, you know, get ahead or whatever. So, anyway, that's a little off topic. But I did learn new names and new movies that I would like to see.
I have a question for y'all. The elementary school and the...